How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons of stuff to talk about today, as we do every Sunday here on the Sports Byline Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and of course, streaming live online on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and moments after the show goes off the air today, the main topic of discussion for the first hour of WWE's, I believe it's called Vengeance. I actually don't even know what the name of the pay-per-view is today. I believe it's Vengeance. It's another show about the third show in the last 7 weeks. So obviously them coming in quick succession here. We have a lot to talk about as far as the lineup for that show, buy rate for some past shows, some UFC buy rates as well that are pretty shocking. We're going to talk a lot about pay-per-view today, how pay-per-view is being affected by the quality of the product, perhaps by piracy as well. A lot of different subjects to talk about. But we are going to run down that show, Vengeance, in detail. Match by match, give you the lineup, predictions from Mike Sempervivi and myself, and a lot of other topics as well. Plus, the news of the week, of which, of course, there is plenty. Bound for Glory, which was TNA's biggest show of the year, took place this past Sunday night. We already have some preliminary buy rate information, maybe not buy rate information, but a little bit of information is in. Some early indications, and not looking quite as good as I expected, although also not a complete disaster by TNA standards. But we're going to talk about that show, the fallout, the non-title change on that show, and the title change on Thursday. The belt is now on James Storm. We'll tell you where that storyline is going and what looks to be happening in the title picture in TNA. Plus, the biggest rating of all time for Impact on a Thursday night happened this past Thursday night. Not the biggest rating of all time. Of course, they went head-to-head on Monday night with Raw a couple of years ago, and they did some very, very good numbers on Monday. But as far as the Thursday night time slot, the biggest rating ever. What does that mean for TNA? We're going to tell you all about that. Plus, a lot of other news, including some thoughts on the Observer Hall of Fame, and so much more coming up in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, every Sunday. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live online at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Facebook.com/OfficialBrianAlvarez. Also, Facebook.com/WrestlingObserver, which is the Wrestling Observer Live Facebook. Head up there to both those pages and click the like button and stay in touch. Got a lot of stuff coming up. We're joined today, as we are every week, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, how are you this fine Sunday afternoon?
I am doing very well, not as epic as the Bound for Glory buy rate, but still pretty good.
I had initially predicted that Bound for Glory was going to do between 20 and 25,000 buys. And later, after they did the build to the Bobby Roode title win, I thought, you know, not doing too bad. I will go as far as say the show is going to do 30,000 buys. You recall this?
I think you may have said 35.
Maybe I said 35. Well, I was really wrong if I said that. But it is actually looking like the show is going to come in about what I had predicted initially, between 20 and 25,000 buys. These are all very early indicators, so there's no final number. And actually, to be honest, there are rarely final numbers for TNA because the numbers are so small. Almost nobody in the industry actually really tracks them. But it's not looking to be a blowaway show or anything like that. It's certainly probably at least three times what your average TNA pay-per-view is going to do if they're doing 7, 8,000. So from that perspective, it is truly the biggest show of the year and a success. But when you look at Hulk Hogan versus Sting, all of the build towards Bobby Roode, all of these different scenarios, it's really not the... this should have done 60, let's be honest. But that wasn't going to happen.
No, you're absolutely right. And then, you know, the TV the next time around, they do exactly what they did last year, which was have a big spike after Bound for Glory. And I kind of dismissed, because I think I said about 25,000 too. And I kind of dismissed it, though, as it, you know, really mattering as being their big show. But I was actually wrong about that. But, you know, it's what can they do with this bump now that they got, just like they got last year, and it was kind of damning. I mean, they started off with 45 minutes of talking. They started with a 1.38. They held those people through a commercial break into the second quarter. In the third quarter, it dropped, and then it raised up again in the fourth quarter, but by the end of the show, it was a 1.29. Exactly what they did last year. They had about a month worth of bump out of it, but they couldn't take advantage of it, and the ratings dwindled again. They've got to take advantage of this. And they didn't really do that good of a job on it on Monday because they had 45 minutes of talking followed by a knockouts tag match. Probably was not the best way to start that show because it dragged on way too long.
Yeah, this is pretty much, listen, the number's great. Okay, I don't want people to say, oh, Brian, he's downplaying a great number. The number was great, but the reality of the situation is you've got to look at patterns. And the pattern for the show and the pattern at this time last year suggests that next week's show is going to be down slightly, and within 3 weeks they're going to be right back where they were. Now, if they've got some great storylines planned, then maybe things will stay at this level or even increase. But let's look at reality here, okay? This is a spoiler, although there's no title change chance to spoil. But I'll just put it this way. Let me go back a little bit. We should talk about the finish of Bound for Glory. At that show, at Bound for Glory, if you didn't see it, Bobby Roode versus Kurt Angle was the main event. It went on last. And Kurt Angle got the win. Bobby Roode had an arm under the ropes, and Kurt Angle held onto the ropes and got a pinfall, and he beat Bobby Roode. And I was amazed. A lot of fans were amazed. I mean, if you listen back to last week's show that we did, I mean, I thought, okay, TNA has done a lot of dumb things in the past, but there's no way Bobby Roode's not getting the title. You don't spend all this time and go through all of this time and effort to build this guy up for the biggest show of the year and not put the belt on him. Of course, you argued otherwise, you know, and you said, well, you know, they can have Kurt Angle win, and it's a chase story and that sort of thing. And my argument was, it's all fine and good to do a chase story, but when you do a chase story, you know, the first loss of Bobby Roode should have been like 4 months ago, and then you build to the big title win at the big show of the year. That was what my theory was. And what happened was the day of the show, Hulk Hogan said, we're not changing the title. And there were so many people backstage that were so upset at Hulk Hogan for this. And you got to keep in mind that the story had been told in such a way that it was to lead to Bobby Roode getting the championship. So at the very last minute, by changing your mind, it actually made Bobby Roode look like a failure. You know, there are ways to do this story where the guy doesn't win and he doesn't look like a failure. But to me, Bobby Roode looked like a failure when he didn't win the title from Kurt Angle. So the next Tuesday, it wasn't the next day, they skipped a day. But on Tuesday, they put the title on James Storm. And a lot of fans were up in arms about that. And I got emails saying, so wait, Bobby Roode's not ready, but James Storm is ready. And this and that. And to me, it was like, okay. If you're not going to put the title on Bobby Roode, and I think you should have, but if you're not going to, then the next best thing is to put the title on James Storm. And then eventually you can build to the feud between the two. It's exactly like the ROH storyline they did with Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. Everybody expected Davey Richards to win the title at Final Battle, and he didn't. And then his partner won it, and it was a six-month storyline before Davey finally challenged Eddie and won the title from him. And they did it very, very well. Now, again, if you're not putting the title on Roode, James Storm is the next best thing. That's what I thought. Well, they've already taped next week's television, and on this coming Thursday's show, they already have shot a number one contenders match between Bobby Roode and, of all people, Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe, everybody! The man who had minus 10 points in the Bound for Glory tournament, and I think it's won one match in like the last 6 months. These two guys were in your number one contenders match, and Bobby Roode won. So, not this Thursday, but the Thursday after, it is going to be Bobby Roode versus James Storm for the championship on TV for free already. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I would bet dollars to donuts that Bobby Roode is going to win the title on that day. In which case, why didn't you just put the title on him at Bound for Glory? Why did you waste everybody's time? And why did you rush through the Bobby Roode-James Storm storyline in 3 weeks? That, to me, The point of all of this is, if they go the way I think they're going to go, 1-1 in 4 weeks.
Well, I guess they can look at it as giving James Storm a TNA Lifetime Achievement Award, considering he's been there since 2002, and now you have the reason that Storm turns on Rude, or Rude turns on Storm, because that's kind of the stuff they like to do. Yeah, I mean, there's better ways. There's a lot of other ways you could have done this whole thing. I mean, first and foremost, put the thing on Rude. And if you weren't going to do that, and obviously the switch was made for a political reason, and Hulk Hogan likes the James Storm character and all of that blase blah stuff, well, okay, but I just, why not have Rude completely decimate Kurt Angle, where Angle can't even walk out there, you know, and then, you know, Sting makes the match and Kurt takes time off, and it, you know, I don't know. I just think they did this incorrectly, but again, we'll see. I mean, and again, nobody wants to discount the numbers that they drew for this past week. It's just, it's because of things like that and because of history, you know, unless they do something otherwise, you have to figure it's going to be the same thing that happens over and over again, which is exactly what they did last year.
The James Storm Bobby Roode storyline is the easiest storyline in the world. And it's real.
And it's another example of why things are the simplest things, the most timeless things. This has been done over and over again. And there's a million and one ways to draw this out with two guys who are familiar and would put on good TV, as long as they're not interfered with too much.
Well, here's the key to why this is such a waste the way they've done it, even the one taping they've done so far. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago about stipulations. Nobody believes 99% of these stupid stipulations. So to get people to buy your show for a stipulation, it has to be a stipulation that people believe is real. You know, a loser must retire stip. Everybody knows that's BS, okay? A loser has to leave Raw or a loser leave. Everyone knows these stipulations are BS. But if you say something like, you know, if Ric Flair loses, his head's shaved. Okay, then the fans know, all right, well, or a hair versus hair. No matter who loses, someone's going to have no hair left. Or a mask versus mask. No matter what happens, something real is going to occur. You're going to see who somebody is. These stipulations work. Which brings us to Sin Cara versus Sin Cara later. But I'll follow up this thought when we get back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live online on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And before the break, I was talking about stipulations, how you can create a stipulation match that people will actually believe, such as Sin Cara versus Sin Cara, mask versus mask, which, by the way, they gave away for free on television with absolutely no build whatsoever. We'll talk about that later. But the point of all of this is you've got to have a stipulation that people, that there has to be something real about it. Everybody knows wrestling is not on the level, but the best things in wrestling are the things where people have that feeling that there's something real about it. And with James Storm and Bobby Roode, there is something real about it. The fact that they've been a team together for years. You don't have that anymore. You don't have these teams that stick together for 2 or 3 years anymore. You know, they put a team together, the team breaks up. You know, WWE doesn't care at all about tag teams, okay? These guys have actually been a team for years. So the fact that they're now doing singles matches, they're still best friends. They aren't doing a lot of tag team matches together, but they're still essentially a tag team that are just working separately. You know, that's something that when you split those guys apart and when you finally get them to feud and when you build up that rivalry between them, you can do that over the course of 6 months and the fans will get into it because it is an extension of something that is real. A team that has been together for a long time. You know, if you and I, Mike, got into a feud, an on-air feud, you know, people are going to be into it to a degree just because we've been co-hosts together for so long. You know, if I started another radio show with a random person And after a week, we started yelling at each other. Nobody cares. You know, there's nothing about that people can get into. This sense of, oh, you know, these guys, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's why brother versus brother always works so well, because these guys are brothers. So James Storm and Bobby Roode, they've been together for so long. They're the number one tag team in TNA. And many people would say, that, you know, the best tag team in North America, or at least the United States. You know, it's not saying much nowadays, but that's the fact. So to do a split and a feud between these guys, you can really do something with this. And the idea of what they've done, and all of a sudden these guys are going to have a match for the championship in 2 weeks on TV for free. I mean, it just absolutely blows my mind. Just blows my mind.
And the fact is that people are emotionally invested in these guys, because even more than what you said on top of that, they're popular. And they're guys who the fans don't hate. They're guys who aren't out. If they are out there for a long time, by the end of it, the fans aren't apathetic towards them. You know, so I that's just another reason there. And again, you can draw this out for really a long time because of that reason. As long as you don't do anything stupid, they obviously probably won't do that. And it's also one where it's, you know, it's the simple jealousy storyline that you could do where. Again, you know, Storm, you know, they had the shot of Storm and AJ Styles, you know, kind of standing there in the ring, and those are the two original guys from TNA. So, I mean, I would think, in my opinion, I would have James Storm end up turning heel and all this, but again, I wouldn't do that for a significant period of time because you don't have to. Now, what they do, who knows?
Anyway, we're still on Bound for Glory, so we may as well continue on this thread. The main event of the show was...
Wait, and by the way, too, about Bound for Glory, I do have to say this. I'm not sure exactly how many people they had there, 4,500 or whatever like that. It was a temple. The way they had it, you know, set up and lit and everything, it did look really good, I thought.
Yeah, that's... it's funny because lately a lot of people have been sending me photos from the building. Not just TNA, but WWE as well. And because attendance has been very poor for a lot of shows over the last 5-6 months. So, you know, people will go to SmackDown and they'll send me a photo and it's like, oh my God, I cannot believe that's a SmackDown taping. It looks like a very well-attended indie event at this point. And people sent me photos from Bound for Glory. It was like, wow. This is the biggest show of the year, and this place ain't even half full. This is not good. But what they did was they moved everybody around in such a way that when they shot that show on television, it was like, wow, this is a big time. This, I won't say it looked packed, but it looked really good. So I was pretty impressed with the way that they set that up and shot it and lit it. Really made, I thought it really helped the show immensely. To have all that, but the semi-main event on the show was Sting and Hulk Hogan, and boy, did we talk about this match last week, and I'm not going to lie, I expected this match to be beyond horrendous. I really did. I thought this would be one of the most horrible matches of the year, and as it turned out, Hulk Hogan went in there, and he wrestled a perfectly acceptable match for a guy who can't move, and he took 3 bumps. Which, of course, he had told people that he was not going to be taking any bumps. So, heat of the moment, or he was feeling good, or whatever the case might be, he took 3 bumps. And he went in there and had a match. And Sting did a fine job on his end, and it wasn't like the best match of all time or anything like that, but it was not a negative star match by any means. And Hogan tapped to the Scorpion Deathlock, and afterwards all of the heels ran in, and they were going to destroy him, and this being Sting. And Hogan was there kind of leaning in the corner, and after taking quite a beating, Sting apparently has no friends because no one came to make the save. He crawled over to Hogan, and he just said, "Help me, Hulkster." And of course, Hulk did the big Hulk up, and he tore his shirt off, and the place went nuts, and he turned babyface. And I don't know what you thought about that, Mike, but to me, I don't know. Hogan is so good at being Hulk Hogan. You know, I know that sounds like a stupid statement, but he's so good at being Hulk Hogan, and he's so good at his shtick that it actually worked. Like, if anybody else would have done the babyface turn the way that it was done here, it would have just been so stupid. You know, there was no reason for this turn. You know, it was all this corny, campy drama, I guess you could call it. I don't even know if I'd call it drama, but that's what it was supposed to be. But anybody else, it would have been stupid. But Hulk Hogan knew exactly how to be Hulk Hogan and do his babyface turn at this moment. And the fans ate it up, and I just thought it was awesome. I don't ever need to see the guy wrestling again. The guy does not need to be the top star in your company. I know that they're going to be fooled into, I don't know what they're going to do with him. But the fact of the matter is, on this night, this was a great Hulkamania moment.
I guess I'm so beaten down by the thought of that match where it was just like, you know, part of it was, if this was going to be Hogan's last time in a ring for all intents and purposes, how embarrassing could this possibly end up being if he really cannot move, and after the match certainly could not move. But he did. I mean, it was an amazing job that he did. It was the right city. It was the right time. And being a child of the 80s, Hulk Hogan can... he still knows when to be Hulk Hogan, and that was absolutely awesome. And it didn't seem like 10 minutes. I mean, the whole thing actually worked perfectly. And it's just, again, like as you said, he is so good at being Hulk Hogan that, you know, no matter what you think about it, no matter whether you thought he overshadowed something else in the show or anything else you want to say, you got to just be in awe of the performance again. And if this is the last time, this is about as good as it could have possibly been for Hulk Hogan to go out as far as, you know, technically actually having a wrestling match, going out against Sting, you know, gives Sting the match back so he can actually now go down in history and say he wasn't selfish, too.
That's right.
He never had to get wins back.
Now,
he gives guys losses back.
Now, I will say this, though. I think he's going to want to do another match. I think he's going to want to either team with Sting against some heels or have a singles match with Ric Flair. I don't know what they're going to do. But
he shouldn't.
Well, he can't help himself. That's the bottom line.
But, yeah, and I don't understand that because I would, if I'm getting the same amount of money, I would just stand in there and be Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, but I don't want to say it's because you've never wrestled, because I have wrestled and I have no desire to ever get back in there.
No, I'm thinking like hips and knees and joints. I still want to be Hulk Hogan at 75 at, like, you know, somewhere in Florida, like Iakea style, sitting on the beach telling stories, and be Hulk Hogan rolling around in a wheelchair, which would be, that's the bigger concern.
Yeah, but that's not what he's thinking about, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
I
it's
guess.
Something, you can go out there and stand there and everybody cheers you when you talk, okay? But having that moment where you're bloody in the corner, and you get to make the save for somebody and rip your shirt off and punch a bunch of guys and they fly around for you. And then, you know, just your actions are causing the people to go even more nuts. I mean, every wrestler who's wrestled on the big stage will tell you that it's intoxicating. That's what they'll tell you. It's better than any drug. And these guys just cannot help themselves. I mean, listen, I'm saying this. Me, I would be happy to be Hulk Hogan and never take another bump, okay? You know, I'd be more than happy. Just go out there and just talk and have everybody cheer, you know. But some of these guys, it's like they want that pop from battle, from having guys bump all over for them, and they're out there swinging and they're the alpha male. And I just think he can't help himself. But anyway, what I was going to say about the whole deal, I've actually completely forgotten. What was I talking about? Hogan and Sting, and or were we?
I think
Hogan,
that's what
Hogan wants to have another match. I had a point that I'm sure was just like compelling. Hogan. Oh, I remember what I was going to talk about. It's actually very important. Hogan, multiple back surgeries. He's shot. He can barely walk to the ring. If you saw him in the match, he can barely move. He actually took 3 bumps. He was in a 10-minute match or whatever. He was actually in much better shape backstage than Kurt Angle, who Kurt was in bad shape. He suffered
that is saying something.
Yeah, he suffered a hamstring injury, and God knows what other injuries he has that he's not telling people about. But he at the end of that match, if you saw the ref hold up the big X sign, there was a lot of concern about Angle. He was dragged to the back. They dragged him back. They took him through the curtain. They laid him down on a couch, and he just laid there. He couldn't get up. And zombified. And for those of you that have seen a lot of Kurt Angle matches, you can imagine, you know, Kurt coming out on Tuesday and doing a 1-minute match with James Storm. That should give you an idea of how banged up that guy is. And he thinks he's going to, you know, make the Olympic team. So we'll talk about that more after the break, plus eventually get into vengeance. So Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday. Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at the best website on the earth, as noted in a poll of fans of WrestlingObserver.com. It is a place to go for all of the news on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons and tons of updates, both TV show reviews, news updates every day, breaking news, and radio shows. If you love this show, if you love Wrestling Observer Live and you only get there once per week, you are missing out. We do shows virtually every single day. In fact, 15 to 20 radio shows every single week are added to the website. If you're a fan of pro wrestling in America, pro wrestling in Mexico, pro wrestling in Japan, mixed martial arts, the indies, we cover everything here on the website in our radio shows. We have a number of awesome hosts, including the great Mike Sempervivi, who does the Adam and Mike Audio Nightmare with, of all people, Adam Summers, and a lot of great stuff. So make sure you check that out. We have a subscription area. It's $10.99. If you sign up, you get full access to every single show we do. So all of the aforementioned 15 to 20 radio shows per week, you not only get those with your $10.99 per month, but if you signed up today on October 23rd, 2011, if you signed up today, you not only would get tonight's Vengeance audio with myself and Dave Meltzer, but you could get all of the shows we did last week as well, and the week before, and the week before, and the week before. Every show that we have ever done in history is up on the website right now for subscribers. So for $10.99, if you signed up right now, you could go back and listen to literally every show we have ever done. It would be like you signed up in 2005. All of these shows are available for download. We have interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Everybody all the way up to Ric Flair and Bruno Sammartino, two of the biggest names of all time. And the list goes on from there. We're gonna have a list coming up soon of everybody that's on the website they're going to point you to. But all of these shows are available. The archives are searchable. It's a great website. I've said it a million times. If you like this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription. And if you sign up and you are not happy, you can contact me and we'll make it right. But it never happens. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. And I guarantee, I'm not kidding, if you sign up, you will not be disappointed if you love this show. So on to the program here. Mike, we were talking about Kurt Angle's injuries. This man wants to make the Olympic team. He claims he's taking this seriously. Coincidentally, nobody else in amateur wrestling is taking it seriously, but I guess we'll see what that means. But this guy's banged up bad.
Oh, to like an epic degree. I mean, it's like, how could he even drag himself out there the next day to even do a minute? I mean, he... For anything you can say about Kurt Angle or anything that he may have taken in his life or maybe taking now or anything, he's just mentally, he is a different person when it comes to pain tolerance. However he gets there as far as control, I have no idea. I'll say this, obviously him in the Olympics right now is, you know, a complete and utter joke. With that said, it does make you think how nasty he must have been and how incredible he must have been in college at Clarion and when he was actually going for those Olympic medals. I mean, it's absolutely epic.
He even admits that, like, the training he does nowadays, he goes, I train really hard, but I don't train anything like I trained in 96. If you saw, I think you can actually, might be online. I know I've seen them somewhere. Maybe it was in his book. But he's got, like, you can actually go and look at the workouts he did heading up to the Olympics in 96. And I don't know, you know, obviously Kurt Angle would tell you he was completely clean and he never failed a drug test during that period. And, you know, even somebody on all sorts of performance-enhancing drugs, and I'm not saying Angle was, I'm just saying if you're a person, you're on all sorts of performance-enhancing drugs, his workout still would have killed you. I mean, it was, when he says I was training 9 to 10 hours per day, I mean, it sounds kind of ridiculous, but if you looked at his workouts and what he did training for the Olympics, I mean, it was absolutely, I mean, it was ridiculous. And he'll even tell you today it was ridiculous. And just years and years of hard training and beating up your body. There's only so many miles on an athlete's body. Almost any athlete will tell you that. And Kurt Angle, I mean, he's that car with like 800,000 miles on it that somehow is still going. And I hope it does not end. I mean, it's going to end. I don't want to say it's going to end poorly, but I mean, compared to your average human being on the street, it's not going to end well. You know, he's going to be hurting real bad at 50. I mean, my grandmother was over here last night. She's 82, and I guarantee she's moving better than Kurt Angle right now. And he's only going to get, you know, when he's 50, 60 years old, it's going to be a rough time. But, you know, he's Kurt Angle.
We're talking about Hulk Hogan, you know, debating over whether he still wants to be Hulk Hogan in or out of a wheelchair in like 70 or 80. Kurt, I mean, look at him and Flair, and then look at Kurt Angle's age. Kurt Angle's got a long way to go.
By the way, everybody, Ric Flair was at Bound for Glory getting involved. I don't want to say I predicted that, but listen, as soon as he claimed that he miraculously healed from his torn tricep and he didn't need surgery, I knew he was going to be at that show.
You're a miracle man, Nate.
I'm not. Well, I thought you were talking about me.
Yes. No, but what did the doctor tell? What did he say?
You're
that
one in a million.
You're one in a million, Nate.
You're one in a million. Yeah. He is one in a million.
Unbelievable.
I suppose we should get into vengeance here. Can't believe we talked so much about TNA. Might as well finish up. Actually, we did talk about Impact's rating, but I don't think I gave the exact number. 2 million viewers on Thursday night. It was the highest rated Thursday night Impact of all time. And no real surprise. I mean, I didn't mention this yet when we were talking about the number, but to me, I know people are going to be angry because it's just how it is with TNA fans. But when I saw that number, and then I heard about the buy rate for Bound for Glory, or at least the indicators, I mean, to me, it was a very simple story. The build for Bound for Glory intrigued a lot of people. It was not intriguing enough for the vast, vast majority of them to actually buy the show, but they all tuned into the first post Bound for Glory Impact to find out what happened. That's what that rating was. And the fact that the rating fell to normal levels by the end of the show indicates that next week or the week after it's going to be close to normal again. But, you know, there are still fans interested. They just didn't do a good enough job getting them interested enough to actually buy the show, which kind of is kind of disappointing because I thought they did a very good job. And the fact that they didn't do 60, I mean, I didn't expect them to do 60, but I mean, I don't know, 5 years ago, they should have done 60. But the fact that they didn't do 60 or 50 or 40 or even 30, it's looking like, I mean, it's kind of surprising and it makes you wonder, What can they do at this point? I would think it's just a string of good shows would probably help a lot. But, you know, it's a show that people were interested in, but there wasn't that hook. And I don't know if it was because Bobby Roode was the challenger for the title. I don't know if people expected Hogan Sting to just be a smoke and mirrors screw job fest or what the deal was. But they had people interested, but not enough interested to buy the show.
Well, and that's always the case with them, even though it was a higher percentage this time around. But I don't know. There's nobody, you could say Goldberg, but really there's nobody else left out there that can come in. So the only thing that they can really do is rebuild faith, put on a string of really good TV shows, even if it doesn't show in the pay-per-view rating right away. I mean, you know, have enough cohesiveness in your storylines and enough focus in your direction and less garbage that they do, and then just keep rebuilding faith, and then maybe those people stick around because everything else you've tried to hotshot and do wacky things and try to trick people and you know, do dopey thing, even though they planned it out, and I know you've been a big proponent of them in the way that they've been able to actually book an entire month, but it's how they get to the end of that month that is always the problem with them. And if they just cut some of that out and rebuild faith over time, that's really all they can do. And really focus upon guys and point to the fact WWE doesn't. You know, they can bring up the Kofis and the Bournes and the McIntyres and DiBiases and those guys and say, you know, this time we're serious. Of course, they're probably not going to be, and people have heard that a zillion times, but if you actually do it, then actually people will believe it.
Let's jump into the Vengeance lineup here. We got a lot to talk about, and it's probably going to take several segments here, but Vengeance is tonight, everybody. And
it takes several segments, and we've talked about it more than WWE has, because I don't know if anybody actually remembers there's a pay-per-view tonight.
Well, it's funny because, like, I don't know what this means, but just when I was thinking about this, on Monday when they did Raw, I knew it was the go-home show, right? But then, like, 3 days later, when I was reminded that Vengeance was this weekend, I'd totally forgotten. And I don't know exactly what that means, but I would guess probably not the strongest buy rate for this show. It's not like the show is bad, but looking at the lineup here, I don't know. I'm really not feeling this show for some reason. Again, I don't think it's going to be bad. And
why
and,
would you?
And the build, it's just there's so... this every year at this time, they have this period where there's like three shows in 5 weeks. And it's always just too much, you know? Or 8 weeks or whatever. They need to drop down to 12 pay-per-views. I mean, to me, it's just... I mean, it just has to. The 2 weeks and the 3 weeks in between shows, it's just not enough time. And looking at this, like I said, there's nothing wrong with this show, except for the fact that I just saw a show. I just watched Hell in a Cell, like 2-3 weeks ago. So another one coming already, it's just like, I'm not ready for this yet. It's just, I'm not into this show. I'm sure it's going to be a decent show. It may even be a good show. Sometimes shows like this end up being among the best shows of the year, but nobody buys them. And I don't see a lot of buys for this show.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, if you look on paper, it's, you know, except for the fact that Dolph is there twice, although I like Dolph, so I can handle him being there twice. You know, it's a pretty money show if you just look on paper. The magic of Christian Sheamus, Henry Show, you know, Alberto Del Rio and Cena, and it, you know, some of that, Orton and Cody Rhodes, I mean, that's pretty damn good. You know, with that said, they hadn't really promoted this thing. This is a placeholder show for the Survivor Series, and they do need to pare it back to 12 shows, especially because TNA is obviously probably going to be around for the next year. UFC has got their number of shows to run, and, yeah, it's a lot of competition on pay-per-view weekends, and you want to try to stay away from those groups, so it's hard enough to do that now as it is anyway. So really, pare it back to 12 and actually build towards them, which they're not going to do.
The main event of the show, and this is straight from WWE, John Cena, Alberto Del Rio is going on last. It is a last man standing match for the championship. Alberto Del Rio, I don't even know what's going on. Doing predictions for these shows, it used to be fun because like you could try and figure out where they were going and what they'd done and how everything played and everything else. And it's just not like that anymore. I mean, they're probably back there right now trying to decide whether they're going to keep it on Alberto or give it to Cena. You know, and it probably will change 10 times before the match actually takes place. So I don't even know why we bother doing predictions of this sort of thing anymore. But, you know, because of the last man standing stipulations, it's easy to do a screw job and have John Cena lose. The fact that Cena and Alberto are going on last, I would presume in the Mark Henry Big Show match that Mark Henry beats the Big Show. I would really be stunned if Big Show won the title. So that would lead one to suspect that Cena was winning the main event, but putting the belt on Cena again over Del Rio, I mean, it'd just be like...
Why?
I mean, there's absolutely no reason for it. So
yeah, that's the biggest thing, is why would they do it? And there's just no reason to.
There's no reason to, and so then you'd be ending the show with two heel wins, which is kind of weird. I don't know. I just don't know how you book this, and they're probably thinking that right now, and someone's probably suggesting, let's just put the title on Cena again, which God knows that's all we need. So we'll talk about this more after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And we are here for the next, 2 minutes before the top of the hour break. Then we'll be back with another hour of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Mike, what would you do with the conundrum of having two heel wins finishing off a WWE pay-per-view, knowing that Cena and Alberto Del Rio is going on last?
I don't really worry about it at all because, you know... I'm going out on the limb the other way and thinking that Mark Henry and the Big Show, there's going to be some sort of wackiness to the end of that match, some sort of Brock Lesnar break of the mat or, you know, JBL going through the mat or some sort of wackiness like that happens where it might take people's, you know, attention away from Del Rio going over Cena, because I just can't fathom Del Rio. They already took the belt off him once. He is a, you know, in a sensitive position right now because he's not over in the way that they wanted to as far as fans truly buying him. Even though he's really good at what he does, he needs that belt. Cena doesn't need that belt. And you need Del Rio to get booed and Cena to get cheered, and that's obviously not going to happen either. So, it's just compounded if Cena wins the belt again, and it's just, again, for what? And that's what people will be saying. Okay, then now what? So this continues out the feud even more by just trading the belt back and forth? Doesn't make any sense.
I'm not saying that when Del Rio got the title, he was seen as a tippy-top guy or anything like that, but whatever momentum he had when he won the title, I just feel was stopped dead in his tracks when Cena tapped him out and won the belt from him. I mean, I just really feel that whatever work they'd done and whatever gains they'd made on Alberto Del Rio and him winning the championship and everything like that, having Cena beat him and then he got the title back in a Hell in the Cell match with beating Punk, of all people, not even Cena, I just feel that just stopped him dead in his tracks.
And followed up with nothing, too, after that Raw afterwards and everything else. They just dismissed the fact he was champion again.
Yeah, they blew it off, and they didn't even play up the obvious storyline of, you know, Cena not getting pinned to lose the title. I mean, it's just... I don't have enough time. We're going to head to the hourly break. When we come back, we'll have some time, and then we're going to have a fun time. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, XM Radio Channel 208, Sirius Channel 94, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined, as we are every week, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking Vengeance, the WWE Vengeance pay-per-view, which just happened to go on the air moments after we go off the air. So 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Vengeance starts. And then afterwards, Dave Meltzer and I live, a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio, which will be taking place later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com, running down all of the matches on that show. And the semi-main event of the show, Mike, is the Big Show versus Mark Henry. Mark Henry defending the WWE, the World Championship against Mark Henry. I do not expect a title change in this match. I expect Henry to hold the title for... I don't know if it's going to be all the way through WrestleMania, but I think he's going to be the champion for quite a while. And Big Show, it's going to be interesting because he's coming back for revenge. They've done some great stuff with the Big Show since he returned. Maybe we'll see a count-out finish or some sort of, as you noted, the ring breaking or something that will lead to another match between the two. But I don't expect Mark Henry to lose the championship here in this match.
No, again, because that's another one where you go, it makes absolutely no sense to do so. And people like the Big Show, and he's good at, you know, turning on the wacky comedy thing and also being a big guy that people are scared of because, well, he's a big guy that can be scary. So you might as well continue this thing out because it's the best thing I think you would have going on SmackDown as far as a top-tier thing. I can wait on Henry and Sheamus for a little bit longer, at least rolling into Royal Rumble season.
So that is the semi-main on the show. As we noted before the last break, the final match on the show is going to be John Cena versus Alberto Del Rio for Alberto's WWE Championship. Later on in the show, we'll talk a little bit about the WWE's return to Mexico. But when we come back from the break, we're going to run down all of the rest of the matches here on this Vengeance show, give you some predictions, and talk about where they may be going leading into Survivor Series. So, back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, every Sunday, here on the Sports Byline Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We've been talking about the Vengeance card. We've already run down Mark Henry and the Big Show, which we both presume will be won by Mark Henry, and Alberto Del Rio versus John Cena, which, given the point it is taking place on the card, final, the last match, kind of an interesting finish if we've got two heels going over in a row. So maybe something weird's going to happen in one of those two matches. But third from the top, Triple H, as the announcers have noted, his big return to the ring. I guess they forgot he wrestled just a couple of weeks ago on pay-per-view. He's going to be teaming with CM Punk to face The Miz and R-Truth in a tag team match. And, Mike, what are you thinking about here for this particular battle?
John Laurinaitis is going to come out. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking wherever they want to go with this story, and I know they want this to be some big, long, epic, you know, doesn't matter how you feel about it. We're doing this story, and it's going to be awesome. Okay, then just tell me where the story's going to go. I really don't have any vested interest in it. Just tell me where it's going to go, because all of my thoughts on making this thing successful and not making CM Punk homogenized and all of those things, Triple H being involved in wrestling in matches, why, when you could have saved that up for something else? It's just, I don't know where they're going to go with it. I'll say Miz and Truth win because of some sort of screw-up between Triple H and CM Punk. Punk can go back to possibly caving a little bit of a conspiracy. I don't know. I have no idea. There's about a zillion different ways this can go, and why even put the thought into it? And this is another one, too, where it's like, for people, because of the storyline and everything else, why would they get this? Why not just wait till Raw on Monday night and see what happens?
You know, it's funny. Actually, it's not funny at all.
Infuriating.
I wouldn't say it's infuriating, but if you go back to Night of Champions, which is about a month ago, a little more than a month ago, September 18th, so a little over a month ago, main event of that show was CM Punk versus Triple H. We had a John Cena Alberto Del Rio match, but the actual final match on the show, a lot of interesting things here. The final match on the show was not the championship match at Night of Champions. It was a Triple H match, who was not champion. And it was Triple H and CM Punk. You got to remember all of the hatred these two men had for each other. They went on last, and the stipulation was that if Punk wins, Triple H has to resign as COO of WWE. And, CM Punk wrestles all the time. Triple H almost never wrestles. And in this feud, they had exactly one match that Triple H won. CM Punk has never beaten Triple H. And, of course, the argument was, well, Triple H can't lose. You know, it's too early to get rid of him as COO. Well, about a week and a half, 2 weeks. I don't remember when it was. But Triple H was stripped of his duties as the head of Raw. And, of course, they've changed that story a million times. Apparently, he's still COO, but he has no power, which is, never heard of a chief operating officer that had no power, but somehow there is one in WWE. But fact of the matter is, now the feud's over. CM Punk never got a win over Triple H. The timing issues were just preposterous, seeing as how Triple H wasn't even in charge like 2 weeks later. And it's just funny, you know? Championship match always goes on last, except if it's Triple H, and, you know, you don't want to have a guy who's not a regular winning unless it's Triple H. And it's just kind of funny.
Yeah, I guess you could call it funny. I know there's people that could call it about a million and one other things, too. It's purpose defeating. I mean, you know, there's a million and one things they could have done. And again, wouldn't this be in the main event? Shouldn't this be at the top? This is epic storyline. This thing that has dominated the television. You know, this should be the biggest thing going on. And I don't want to hear that all of a sudden the title is important and that's why they're doing it. I think there's a lot, again, let's see how this thing rides out. They have this epic plan for it, you know, because they planned for it so well. So I guess who knows where it could actually end up. I just don't think anybody's going to be any better for it at the end, and it's going to be, the way it's looking, a lot of wasted opportunity.
Let's play a quiz game here. Triple H and CM Punk had a blood feud. CM Punk called Triple H's wife stupid or whatever he called her. And Triple H got so mad, and it's personal now, it's not business, blah, blah, blah. Now they're friends. What happened, Mike?
I think what it was is that Triple H invited CM Punk over. They were going to have this sort of, like, this Cold War summit straight out of the 80s, like Reagan and Gorbachev meeting in Geneva, and they were going to sit down like superpowers and work out the issues that they had and team up together. And CM Punk was sitting there, and he saw Triple H, and he saw at Triple H's feet Lucy, part two, the dog. And he saw Stephanie there, and he saw Lucy, and then he thought about Chris Jericho and Lucy, and Jericho loved Lucy too, and maybe Punk loves Lucy that much where he's just okay with wearing Triple H's blazer and being his buddy and fighting the good fight just alongside Triple H. I'm
trying to find out on Wikipedia if there's any explanation, but there's not. It just says...
There's not. And again, this is better for CM Punk's bottom line than the fact that he has like secured and sealed his spot, which, you know what? 10 years ago, people were wondering, you know, there's no way they'd ever take a chance on Samoa Joe or Bryan Danielson or CM Punk. And at least CM Punk has been able to, because of some lucky times with Paul Heyman and things like that, he's been able to get to where he's gotten to. And I think that's great. And it's great for him professionally. It's just, again, you can make him look a lot better professionally in the long run if you, and again, Cena's like this, almost all these guys are this way, where it's just so frustrating. Again, they do so many things great that they forget about the, you know, the things that actually got them to all of this money in the first place, which was good entertaining sports entertainment slash professional wrestling.
I can't find an explanation for their friendship on Triple H's Wikipedia either. Interesting. Anyway, they're friends tonight, everybody, which brings us to another point. Where's Kevin Nash?
Doing E60 reports on Scott Hall.
I got to talk about that later. Because the last I saw...
And again, maybe they've successfully made you forget about Kevin Nash playing a part in things, but wouldn't you wait till the Survivor Series, probably?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how Kevin Nash's return is going to play into this, because, you know, the big storyline was our Nash and... you know, are Nash and Triple H in cahoots to beat up CM Punk? You know, the last I saw of Nash, wasn't he running in and powerbombing CM Punk?
Well, maybe now that Triple H doesn't have any control anymore, he won't feel bad about beating up on CM Punk, and we can have Triple H and Miz and Truth and Kevin Nash be the new World Order DX thing.
So now, presumably, it would have to be Nash coming back as a heel, and he's battling both Triple H and CM Punk.
I guess so. Sure.
It's interesting here. Now, of course, the next pay-per-view is Survivor Series, and Rock is going to be there teaming up with John Cena. And where do you think they're going with that? What's the match going to be, Mike, if you were putting this together? Are you going to put a Triple H and Punk on the same team as John Cena and The Rock, and they go up against, I don't know, Nash, Truth, Alberto and Miz? Is that your Survivor Series match?
I would assume that would make the most sense.
Hmm.
That would actually make the most sense, because what else are you going to do? I mean, with who else do you put in there and slide in there? You know, it's not like it was a couple years ago where it was just like, you know, you had DX with Punk, and I forget who else they were with at that time. It's just, again, what other part do you put in there or take out unless it's going to be some sort of surprise?
Well, we shall find out. Let's get down the rest of this card here before I try and my brain melts trying to figure out how to make these storylines work. Dolph Ziggler is wrestling twice on the show tonight, everyone. He's facing both Zack Ryder on pay-per-view for the U.S. title.
And well, he lost to him a lot.
That's right. And also they're doing Swagger and Dolph Ziggler against Air Boom for the tag team titles. So there is a possibility that Dolph will either leave with one title, two titles, or no titles. How do you think it's going to end up for a young Ziggler?
My prediction is that Mason Ryan walks out with both the tag titles and the U.S. title, and actually somehow walks out with the Cruiserweight title.
I wonder if they'll actually put the tag titles on Dolph and put the U.S. title on Ryder.
I can't believe that. I've talked myself out of that option.
You know, Zack Ryder is in the top 10 as far as selling merchandise in WWE. Are you aware of that?
I would have figured that, yeah.
We'll talk about that after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're writing down the Vengeance pay-per-view, which takes place just moments after this show goes off the air. And we've been talking about Dolph Ziggler. He's wrestling twice on the show. It's interesting. He's defending both the U.S. title and fighting for the tag team titles against Air Boom. And We were discussing whether he was going to leave with 1-0 or two titles. And, Mike, I guess your prediction is, what was your prediction? Mason Ryan? What does he have to do with anything?
Who the hell knows? But why? I mean, think about this. I would go with actually Dolph with the U.S. title, with the tag titles, because I like him and Swagger together as a team, and I don't want him, you know, it started off looking like a TNA-type tag team, but them rolling out there, being varsity club level, you know, pricks and just being arrogant. And Dolph is a guy that they have not been able to kill, even though they have unintentionally slash intentionally tried to with things like Kerwin White and things like the or Nick Neem, whatever his name was when he was actually with Chavo Guerrero as Kerwin White, and the whole Spirit Squad and everything else that they've tried to do with him, where he's succeeded in spite of everything else that they've done, which will make it great for the DVD later on after he wins a world title, and he can say that it was, you know, I was just sitting in there, and this is what hard work and persistence will do, even though they basically are lucking into him. And, you know, I would actually have him stay in the tag team with Swagger and, you know, win those belts, and I would be completely fine with that for a while. The thing is, I don't want him to lose the belt to Zack Ryder, because that doesn't really make any sense either. Yeah, he's beat him three times, but he should get his revenge in this match. Unless this is going to be a showcase for Ziggler, if they have something planned, I mean, I can actually see Mason Ryan coming out there and somehow ending up with that title, considering they've obviously love Mason Ryan, who is a, well, you know, Heath Slater was given 30 days for apparently failing a drug test. I'm not sure about Mason Ryan or anything like that, but I don't know. I guess I'm not that much of an athletic wonder. Brian, is it possible to look like Mason Ryan by the gifts of God?
Well, I don't know.
This is possible.
Anything's possible, right?
Well, are we presuming that about the pin and the chemicals and spraying them all over the place if you stuck one in them?
Are we presuming that anything is possible?
Anything is possible.
If we're presuming anything's possible, then yes, he could look like that.
Just him running to the ring again. This on was it Raw or SmackDown? I can't remember which one it was. Where he was sort of running to the ring.
He is bigger than Dave Bautista ever was. Everyone, that's a big dude.
When Bautista is saying that dude is big, what does that mean?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
And Zig Zeke are just—they should just be some mountainous tag team.
Indeed. I don't know about Mason Ryan. He's still very, very green, and he needs to cut his hair badly.
What about the beard? You like that?
But I'm fine with the beard, but the hair. Something about that hair that's just, a buddy of mine was over last night. I know we're not talking about Vengeance, but let's talk about wrestling that people actually, some legendary matches here. I doubt any of those are going to take place on tonight's show. A friend of mine was over last night, and he never watches wrestling. But he knows some of the old names. You know, he grew up watching some of these guys. And he's always like, whatever happened to that crazy guy? What crazy guy? You know, the crazy guy. He put a sock on his head. Oh, Mick Foley. Yeah, whatever happened to that guy? Oh, he's coming back to WWE in about a month. Really? He's still alive? Oh, yeah. He's So anyway, we're sitting there, and I put on 24/7. And we were watching some old matches, and we watched some Madison Square Garden from 91, and like, him and his girlfriend and my wife, they're just all aghast at the screen going, what is up with their hair and the tights? And this is 91, and they had mullets and everything like that. I'm like, wrestling's always like 10 years behind the times and in terms of fashion and that sort of thing and haircuts and that sort of deal. And that's what I think when I look at Mason Ryan. It's like, you know, maybe you would have got away with that haircut like 10, 15 years ago, but you ain't getting away with it today. So cut that hair. And we also watched, here's another one. We watched the original Hell in a Cell with Michaels and Undertaker, which I don't know how many times I've watched that match, but it's still awesome today. And, my wife doesn't watch a lot of wrestling, but she knows, you know, it's on all the time. So she's like, oh, my God, that's Shawn Michaels? I was like, yeah. She goes, oh, my God, that's The Undertaker? And I'm like, yeah, because obviously they're much older now and, you know, the road has owned them. But everybody in the room, we had kind of a Halloween type party last night. Everybody in the room watched that match from start to finish. Just, you know, they just watching that match because that match is great. That is an awesome professional wrestling match, whether you're a fan or not. And they were all glued to the screen, and I was as well. So anyway, I don't know what the point of this is, except if you've never seen that match, what the heck is wrong with you? That match is awesome.
Well, and that's the thing, is building fans. And we talked about that actually after that disastrous Raw a couple weeks ago where, you know, I and like a lot of people were sitting there watching that thinking, I can remember things from 25 years ago. Clearly and cleanly, and just like it was yesterday, and the call that was made by a Soli or a Jim Ross or a David Crockett, whoever it was, you remember that stuff. And what are they doing right now to build new fans and to make new superstars and to establish those guys and those characters and to, you know, build on everything? I mean, unless your all of your investment is going to be in airing stuff from the past, I mean, I don't know. They're just not doing a very good job rooting in new fans, and it shows by attendance, by pay-per-view, by interest in anyone other than a handful of guys, and it shows in their confidence in everyone else besides that handful of guys. So, again, they have got to rebuild faith in their base, and they will be fine, but they keep getting away with or from what actually makes them good, and they just keep screwing it up. I mean, one of the big complaints is, you know, none of these guys can work and things like that. Well, whose fault's that? And what are they doing in developmental right now to help their business 10 years from now? It's one of those things where you just shake your head, and it's like they just are back on their laurels, going through the motions, getting from show to show, only worrying about big shows and popping big things at certain times, and it's a frustrating thing to watch. Especially because they always go on that run usually between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, obviously outside of like Triple H and Orton's house and things like that, where they are so very good. The most frustrating part about the lead up to WrestleMania is knowing that the malaise is going to come afterwards, and it's going to stay for the rest of the year.
You know, the other thing that was funny last night regarding that match was there's another guy in the room. And I guess he's watched here and there, but he's not like a big fan. And he's like,
"Do you have a bar in your basement or something?"
I don't have a bar, but we got a big island, and there's always wine in the house. So
nothing wrong with that.
No, but he's like, "So they're wrestling in a cage?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Why? What's the point of the cage?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, they just climb out." And I said, "Well, there's a top on this cage," and he was just like baffled. I mean, he was just like baffled. And I had to explain to these people in this room that, you know, back in the day, there would be guys that would try to escape matches. They would get themselves counted out, or their friends would run into the match. So eventually, you put the two competitors in a cage so nobody could get in and nobody could get out. And they were just like, "Oh." Because it's not like that anymore, you know? The Hell in the Cell pay-per-view we just watched is like, it's just time for matches, you know? There was like no reason for it or anything like that. And the one guy that was asking about the cage, he couldn't believe there was blood. And I was like, "Yeah, they used to actually bleed in a cage." So it's just kind of, you know, when you look at the Hell in the Cell buy rate, and it's like, no one buys that show anymore. And you think about what, you know, that Shawn Michaels Undertaker match, as far as like for business, I mean, Hell in a Cell was guaranteed buys for like almost a decade after that match, you know, just off the strength of that match and the Mick Foley match. And the fact that they always tried to put a classic in there and that sort of thing. And it was always, you know, they tried to time it, you know, right place, right time. And after like 2-3 years of just randomly having Hell in the Cell matches with no blood and no good reason for it, they've just killed the gimmick. I mean, killed the gimmick dead after all these years and all these great matches. It's sad, is what it is.
And the thing is, they don't have too many more to fall back on. I mean, the Triple Tower of Doom, War Games. I mean, they've burnt out Iron Man's on TV, on free TV. They've burned out Hell in the Cell. They burned out the Survivor Series. I mean, it's hard to screw up the Royal Rumble, but I don't have much faith in that one. I mean, WrestleMania is about the only sacred cow, although they burned out Money in the Bank. They burned out, You know, you name it, they've burned out stipulation retirement matches. They've burned almost all of them out. So after you burn them all out and there's nothing else left to do, why don't you go back to the good basic stuff that works in MMA right now, that works in other forms of entertainment that you want to be right now? I mean, try to do those things, you know, because they're simple and they work.
We should go back to vengeance here while we still have time. Christian and Sheamus. This should be a pretty good match.
This is another one, too, where if it's going to be a placeholder of the show, if I'm going to see Henry and Show for another month, I'd like to see Christian and Sheamus for another month. I have no problem with this whatsoever because Sheamus is one of those handful of guys that they do like and they do have confidence in, and he needs to get better, and Christian is pretty damn good and good at getting the reaction that they want. So I would continue on with this. And Christian, because it is a straight-up match right now without a stipulation, Christian gets a cheap win.
And two other matches. We'll see how much time we have here for this before our next segment. But Beth Phoenix and Eve Torres. Eve just randomly chosen, because there's only four girls in the division apparently on Raw, to face Beth Phoenix for the title. I expect Beth to beat her. And we're going to need some sort of, a heel turn or a babyface turn for somebody. Because if the only girls in the division are Natalya, Beth, Eve, and Kelly, you've about exhausted your possibilities here.
Beth with Natty interfering, Kelly screams, and then if they're going to do anything, they actually do it the next night on Raw.
All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we'll talk Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, and then the rest of the news. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Michael Sempervivi. Also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And, of course, for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. We have columns, we have TV show reviews, and we have radio shows. And, my God, do we have a lot of radio shows. 15 to 20 shows every single week. If you love this show, Wrestling Observer Live, and you only get to hear it once per week, you are missing out. If you're a freeloader, you don't get any radio until next week at this time. However, if you signed up at the website, you would have a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio tonight, immediately following the Vengeance pay-per-view. Dave Meltzer and I are going to be up. All of the results of the show, backstage notes, notes on Raw tomorrow night, all of the news from the weekend. That's just tonight. Tomorrow, brand new shows every single day of the week. We also have interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Guys like Ric Flair, Bruno Sammartino, Bret Hart has been on the show. Just this past week, Rich Franklin has been on the show. Big John McCarthy from MMA. We have some of the biggest names in MMA and pro wrestling on the show every single week. And if you sign up today, for your $10.99, that's all it is per month, $10.99. You sign up, you not only get all of the new shows, but you get our full archive. Our full archive, every show we've ever done dating back to 2005, is available right now for you. If you sign up today and you miss the Rich Franklin interview on Wednesday, it doesn't matter. You go into the archives, you grab that show. You want to hear the Bret Hart show we did 2 years ago talking about his career? You go back and you grab it. Bryan Danielson, you go back and grab it. The list goes on and on. $10.99, I've said this a million times, if you like this show, I guarantee you that you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. $10.99 a month, WrestlingObserver.com is the way to go. If you don't like it, which is impossible if you like this show, but if you don't like it, contact me and we'll make it right. But that never happens, if I do say so myself. So, anyway, on to the last card, the last match on the card for Vengeance tonight. Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton. I expect this to be a pretty darn good match. What are you thinking, Mike?
Yeah, I actually think this will be pretty great. I mean, they are really good together and generational rivals and all of that stuff. And, again, being a child of the 80s, I'm very happy they brought back the old Intercontinental title. I don't think there's going to be a debate about that, as we have over the Winged Eagle World Heavyweight Championship belt and the one they used before that with all the flags that I like more. No, everyone's got to like the new Intercontinental title and again, here's another one. If this is going to be a placeholder, completely fine with it. You know, I'd like to see Orton get a cheap or Rhodes get a cheap win, and then this thing continue on too. Because again, I mean, they're good together, and why not? People buy it. So whether they do that or not, I don't know. If they're not going to do that, I'd like to see Rhodes win, but I'd be more apt to think that Orton wins. Although if that does happen, it does boost the value of the Intercontinental title. The thing with that is they don't like doing that with guys because they make it look like it's a step down.
All right, we got a lot of news to talk about today before we go off the air, so let's get right into it. Jerry Briscoe suffered a mild stroke last week, is apparently back home and recovering, which is good news. I believe this is not his first stroke, but hopefully things go well and he can go back to work for WWE, and our best wishes to him.
Oh, God, absolutely. And, yeah, Jim Ross talks about it in his latest blog. And again, not the first time for Briscoe, but hopefully a speedy recovery for the legend.
WWE was in Mexico last week and did not do as well as many people expected. Not horrible or anything like that, but for the first television tapings in Mexico and Alberto Del Rio going as the WWE champion, I think they expected things to be a lot better. And I guess lost in all of this, and I will use the term lost since it was not even promoted on Raw. On SmackDown this week, Sin Cara versus Sin Cara, the feud is over. Sin Cara Negro has been unmasked by the good Sin Cara. And I think we talked about this on the show last week. I think I ranted and raved for like an hour about it, but just a complete waste. A complete waste. You saw the match, Mike. What did you think?
I'm surprised they gave it as much time as they did, and it's not like they gave me a ton of time or anything like that, but they made it look good. It's not like they sold it great afterwards in commentary or anything like that. And okay, Sin Cara wins, the mask comes off, they make fun of the way the guy looks. Okay, now what? So, you know, I don't know. Sin Cara sells merchandise. He's hard to match up guys with. They've gone out of their way to not match him up with guys that can make him, you know, fit on the card. It's not like he's got to be a superstar or anything like that. And I think people get upset with, like, Lucha style and, you know, Mystico being in WWE. Look, he plays to a fan base, and have him, you know, 31 flavors of ice cream on a show. He's got a place. Place him in it properly, and it's going to be okay. It's just, what do they do from here? Who knows? It's probably not going to be much.
I hope he returns. I expect him to return to FCW, quite frankly.
Well, yeah, it's probably Hunico goes there, and then with Sin Cara, you know, what do you do? I mean,
yes,
they
Hunico
haven't
to FCW
Ryan on any shows in a while. I mean, I don't know.
And you know the fact that the non-Unico Sin Cara won the mask. I mean, I guess he's okay for now. He's obviously had a lot of problems in WWE. Perhaps this will be the door opening for Averno to come in, as has been teased for a long time. And yes, Unico would be the one I would expect to go back to FCW. Or I don't know. Maybe it depends. Maybe they decide they're going to try and do something with him. But at this point, I just expect him to be lost in the shuffle. You know, so maybe
well,
it'd be better to.
You know what? Putting him third on a show against Averno, who you've already signed anyway, why not do that to showcase, you know, and build a little bit of a story? You never explained the lights. You never. There's a million and one things you didn't do, and you could have another Mexican guy with a mask that could sell merchandise for a while, and you can have a story of these guys from Sin Cara's past, and at least it would give him a reason to be and actually make some sense and play into the novella thing that, you know, you obviously got him for, which was play to the Mexican fan base and the growing number of Latinos in the United States. I mean, you know, I don't know, call me crazy. I guess I'm not in the business, but if I was in the business, that would probably be something I do to make business.
What did you think of Scott Hall on E60?
Well, it's not a shock because I think we've all seen the footage from Fall River where he had the reported stroke or whatever it was 2 days before that, and he goes to the show. Or the seizure, and he goes to the show, and he was all, you know, whacked out, didn't even know where he was, could barely move and talk, and the whole nine yards. I think we've all seen that, but when you put it in with the cinematography that E60 did, and obviously, you know, being a documentary series. I mean, they know how to do things correctly, and they really framed it in a way where, you know, it's an incredibly sad story, obviously bringing his son into it, and his son wanting to be a professional wrestler, and debate over whether professional wrestling did this, and the whole nine yards with it. I mean, it was a fantastic, they did a really fantastic job at showcasing exactly where Scott Hall is at, and it's not a surprise to any of us, except for the fact that I didn't know about the, I've always heard about the demons, and there was always something that happened in Hall's past that nobody ever talked about, but it was always alluded to by Kevin Nash and people like that, where it was like, look, there's a lot more to Scott Hall and his situation than you'll ever know past Dana, past anything that's happened with him, and the history of alcohol in his family, all of that stuff. They said there was something else. Second-degree murder charge or whatever it was, as far as getting into the fight at the club and shooting the guy with his own gun. I had never heard that before, and that was even more shocking and another explanation into why Scott Hall is the way he is, and it's a very tragic thing. But it's also one thing WWE has done right, whether they wanted to or not, whether it was for legitimate reasons or not, the fact that they've spent six digits on Scott Hall in treatment, I mean, again, it's when they do the charitable stuff, for whatever reason that they do it, the fact that they do it and have spent that much is actually a very good thing for WWE.
Shot a man in the head at point-blank range. Yeah. That
probably
was certainly
messed me up too.
That was certainly eye-opening. I guess an update on that show, for those of you that saw it, if you haven't, it's up on the ESPN website. I'm sure you can go find it up there. Just Google it. I don't know when it was shot. Obviously, in the last couple of months or so. But since it was shot, apparently Scott's son, Cody, had got fed up and moved out. He's done with his father again. He's done with pro wrestling again. He wants nothing to do with Scott. And Scott, I believe, as of right now, is back in rehab. There were very few rehab places that would even take him at this point. There were a couple of left, but he's gone into it, and he's insisting that he is not leaving early, as he has done many times in the past, and he is not getting out until he is clean. And it is, again, on WWE's dime. As Stephanie McMahon noted, they've spent more money on him than any other individual in history. So we shall see. I don't know. This is a tough thing. Addiction, especially when it's been going on for as long as it has with Scott Hall, you have to want to stop. And I don't know if he wants to stop. You know, he says he does. If he really truly wants to stop, then hopefully things will be all right for a while. And if not, then this pattern will continue. But you know, I was thinking about this the other day. If he ends up in rehab and he really becomes committed to it and he ends up clean, and God knows I'm presuming a lot here. But it could all be the result of that very shady promoter dragging him out at that show in Fall River, because that's where the ESPN people even got the idea for this in the first place. They saw the video of that, and they saw the video and thought, my God, what a story we could make here. And they did. So, you know, I have nothing good to say about that promoter. He came off so badly on that deal. So badly. But it's funny how the world works. You know, if things turn out all right for Scott Hall in the end, then that one shady promoter that took advantage of a guy at the lowest point in his life, that could be the catalyst for things getting better for that individual. And it's very difficult for me to say such a thing, because I don't want it to come across like I'm going, hey, this guy saved this guy's life or anything like that. I mean, the whole thing is just, it was a total disaster that day. But it is funny sometimes how things work or don't work.
It's amazing, after being a little kid with those little AWA Remco toys of Scott Hall and Kurt Hennig, and, you know, to watch his whole career and to watch this thing happened over time and know it was happening and have everyone tell you that knew Scott Hall that it was going to end this way, and the fact that it keeps unraveling and unraveling and unraveling before your eyes has just been, it's amazing to say that even though he's not laying in a bed hooked to a machine, Scott Hall every day of his life is essentially on life support, and that's what rehab is doing for him, and that's what it was said in the piece and drilled home in the piece. You know, it's just Kurt, you know, where Scott Hall just is walking around on life support.
All right, as far as other news, before we wrap this here segment up, GSP out, which is a rather big story, suffered an injury in training, and he is out of action. He's out of next weekend's UFC, so BJ Penn, Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz is back in the main event again, everybody. It's not going to be an 800,000 buy show, but just the very fact that Diaz, after no-showing a press conference, got bumped out of main event money with GSP, and via twist of fate is back getting main event money for his fight with BJ Penn. It's rather ironic, but he almost no-showed another press conference last week. He showed up 45 minutes late. A disaster this would have been.
I say justice for Diaz, who shouldn't have been out of that main event in the first place.
Justice for Diaz. We're going to be back in just a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. How time flies. Show is already over, and didn't even get a chance to go over all of the news, but I think we got most of the biggest stories of this past week. As noted, coming up here in just a moment is the WWE Vengeance pay-per-view. And, of course, tomorrow is a brand new edition of Raw, and they're going to be doing the build for Survivor Series. The Rock is returning to the ring. He's teaming with John Cena. And I think we talked about this before, but very quickly before we go, Mike, what do you think about the idea of Rock returning to the ring before WrestleMania and teaming with John Cena?
I guess I'm fine with that. I don't know. As long as what happens last time to Cena, and it'll probably happen again here too, I mean, because he's only had one serious moment, and that's with immediately after Del Rio had beat him for the belt where he was angry again. But I hope he doesn't come off looking like a schmuck in all this, because at some point Rock's going to be gone again. But I guess I'm okay with it, because I guess get as much mileage as you can out of the Rock. If you have the chance to use him, why don't you use him?
So that, of course, the build starts tomorrow for that, and hopefully, I don't know. I'm the storylines WWE has been doing of late. I'm petrified. I'm not gonna lie, I am petrified that they're going to screw up The Rock and John Cena. I mean, it was so easy to just promote it for a year and have Rock show up here and there and tease the match over and over, but he's already in the ring. They're probably going to want him in the ring for another show. He's probably going to have a brawl with John Cena at some point, and I just am praying they don't screw this up. I mean, WrestleMania is still going to do well because it's WrestleMania, but this is the kind of match that, I mean, really could set records for WrestleMania in terms of if you just look at how much the show costs nowadays and everything else. I mean, this really could be like the biggest WrestleMania of all time, Rock versus John Cena. But you know, we'll see what they do. I'm tentative. We got to wrap it up, everybody. I want to thank Mike, of course, as always, all the folks at Sports Byline USA. We're going to be back next week with a brand new show. Check out WrestlingObserver.com. Talk to you again after a while. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.